Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
From Los Angeles, I'm Justin Tsevakis.
And I'm Zach Bertie. Welcome to AnCast 19 we're on now.
God, it's been 19.
Yeah, heading into the holidays here. Just up front, we should tell people the next two shows are going to be special, hour-long, maybe a little bit more than an hour. We're going to talk about the last decade's worth of anime.
For all intents and purposes, might as well be the whole life cycle of the anime bubble in the States.
Yeah, as it currently exists. We might have a guest, we might not, it might just be the two of us, we don't know yet, but, you know, those will be real casual shows, we're just going to basically reminisce about the last 10 years. We're going to split it into two shows, 2000 to 2004, and then 2005 to current day, and I'll tell you, I'm looking back over, you know, I started at the year 2000, I just started into the news archives on the site.
Right.
And
yeah,
holy,
I did the same thing.
Jesus. it's like digging up fossils.
I can't believe that these were news stories.
Yeah.
I really can't. It's like, oh, maybe Funimation? No, it wasn't even Funimation back then. No one was even talking about Funimation.
It was
like, maybe Media Blasters licensed something.
Yeah. Yeah. let's all sit in the industry panel room at Anime Expo and cheer for our favorite licenses. That still happens to a very minor degree, but man, those were the days. Anyway, so we'll be talking about that for a couple of hours, and we're going to split that into two shows, like I said. There'll be one next week and one the week after.
It's the AnCast Decade End Special.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. So we both watched the same show this week, and I'm responsible for this. It's Spice and Wolf, which, the reason I wanted to watch this was, A, Funimation sent it for review, and Theron Martin's going to review it for us. And I was curious about it because I'd heard that this was sort of a big otaku show. Like, it was pretty popular among, you know, the hardcores. And mostly for the, I guess they're really into the wolf girl character.
Right. I've heard a lot of couched opinions on it. Like, it's really nice and I like it, but it's really slow and whole episodes go by where nothing happens.
Yeah.
That's what I heard a lot.
Well, that's true. So the other reason is that, you remember the light novel came out, or is coming out, from Yen Press, and they changed the cover art so that it would fit in more with the young adult section at a bookstore. So they rendered sort of this kind of realistic-looking naked wolf girl rather than the generic anime art that generally would have been on there in the first place. And it caused this huge outroar because the character apparently does have a lot of devoted fans. But the thing that got me like, oh, really, what, was in the discussion thread about changing the cover, somebody came in and unironically, and I'm very good at picking out when somebody is trolling or making shit up or being ironic, bad English, you know, bad sentences, said, this is insensitive to the people who consider her to be their wife. and I'm my mind blown, said, what, really? Like, really? Like, and you know, the character is pretty popular among the hardcores, and I guess some people have named her as their waifu, so I wanted to see what it was about, and so I put it in, and I have to tell you, I am fucking baffled why that show has any popularity at all. It's not bad, it's not a bad by any stretch, but it is really fucking weird idea for a show.
Right.
Because what it boils down to, and I watched pretty much the whole show, I got through about 10, 11 episodes of it. I will point out that is because I was laid up with busted ankle and didn't want to get off the couch.
Fair enough.
But I watched like 10, 11 episodes, and part of it was just being baffled at really, this is popular? The basic rundown is there's this merchant, and it's ye olde generic medieval times,
right.
Sort of during the spice trading or whatever. And there's a merchant, and he meets this girl who's actually a pagan harvest god, a wolf god that they would make sacrifices to make sure there was a good harvest. Anyway, it turns out she's also a cute little naked girl, and they...
Oh, about that.
Yeah, what a shock. Anyway, they team up, and it's sort of their life on the road. And most of the episodes are lengthy but really simplistic conversations about the price of
grain
and salt, and he buys some armor at one point. And it's very slow, not a lot happens, the girl's kind of a bitch. What I got from it was, it's like watching, and I said this over Twitter, it is very much like watching someone haggle dry good prices at the Oregon Trail General Store with their bitchy girlfriend. That's what it feels like to me. And whole conversations go by where they're just... They keep saying coins. Like, everything is measured in coins. And by the time I got to the 11th episode, I was ready to fucking throw the DVD out the window the next time someone said the word coins. Because it's coins, 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 for just nonstop. That's all the dialogue. And I don't know. I found it just kind of baffling. Like, why would a show that is basically ye olde economics 101 with bitchy moe girlfriend, is that the whole appeal?
Yes.
I don't get it.
One thing that I was really curious about, I wonder how much of this is, first of all, even though it's like kind of a gentle show, it's really kind of target pinpointed on several fetishes. First, there's Moe, just the overall character design.
Right.
Second, there's Tsundere, the character type.
Is that, now, are we sure? Because you take a lot of shit when you get that wrong. I don't know if she's actually considered I don't know what kind of dairy she is. I assume it is, because that's the bitchy one, right?
That's the bitchy one. That's like, you know, who's that female Hokage in Naruto. That's Tsundere.
Okay, right.
Yeah, and, you know, so you have a slightly overly aggressive, where's the pants in the relationship, furry girl.
Yay.
Furry moe girl.
Yeah, God. So it's just basically, so is it just a cynical exercise? I mean, is it just a cynical pandering?
It is, though. That's the thing. I don't think it's 100% cynicism. It doesn't feel like a total cynical cash grab. It feels like someone actually, you know, put real, you know, blood, sweat, and tears into this, into making it something like almost personal, but it eludes me.
Well, but then why do they spend so much time... This is the show where we old fogies sit around talking about how we don't get the new stuff.
But, right.
But the whole episodes are just like boring discussions of the price of dry goods. And it's just, like half the reason I kept watching it, I wasn't even watching it at 1.5 speed. I was watching it normal speed, which is rare when I'm trying to get through a show. But I was just sitting there like head in hands, like, what? Like, this is popular? Like, this got made? Like, I can't even imagine. What is the light novel like?
Oh my God.
Is it just like a series of charts? A series of charts with a little wolf girl in the corner who's naked.
Right. You know, I gotta wonder. I will admit there is a little bit of pleasure to be had in just kind of laying back and kind of fly on the wall watching some completely foreign business being transacted. To a point, I could see that as an OAV.
Well, spoiler alert, the big, you know, villain, like, the horrible thing that happens is he buys a bunch of armor, basically trading on armor futures, like, thinking he's gonna go to this town and the armor market there is booming. So he's going to sell it at a high price. He gets there, and it turns out the armor market has collapsed, and his debt has been sold to another company. And you have 48 hours to give us the money that you owe us because your merchandise is worthless. Which, that is the most boring fucking thing in the world. I mean, but I did find it strangely compelling. I mean, I sat there and watched it. So.
That's the thing. You got through 11 episodes of this, yeah. And you bail on shows really quick.
Yeah, I don't understand.
That's the weird thing about this, too. I only watched two episodes because that's all. I did not have the DVD, so I could only watch. First of all, this is a show that I don't think I could stand subtitled.
Yeah.
I needed this to be dubbed.
The dub was fine.
And the dub was fine. It wasn't one of their best dubs, but it was
generic, yeah. American voices.
But I you know, I watched the two that Funimation had on Funimation.com. They've got to fix that player.
Yeah, their player is a little wonky,
but... Yeah, and ultimately I found myself compelled and wanting to watch more, and I don't understand why.
Yeah.
This is the most boring subject matter ever. I mean, it's like, why not make an anime out of cute moe girls engaging in credit default swaps?
That's, you know what? That's probably going to happen. Moe Moe Credit Coon or something is coming up right around the corner. I guarantee it's going to happen. One thing I wanted to mention was the title. At first, I thought it was just nonsense Japanese title. And
shown an Alan Greenspan.
Yeah. Right. Thanks. Going back to that. But the title, I thought it was just two nonsense words. I mean, aside from the character being a wolf. And it reminded me immediately of... Did you ever play that Japanese PlayStation 1 game, Vib Ribbon?
Like once or twice. I liked it, but it was so weird.
Yeah, well, it immediately reminded me of a song on Vib Ribbon called Laugh and Beats. And I immediately put those two like together. In the free association game that is my head, I put those two together. But the thing about it is, what irritated me is that at one point, it's like episode 4 or 5, he's like, he finishes a transaction with someone where he, I guess he like bought some pepper.
Right.
After they talked about the price of pepper and what it's really worth in, you know, this type of coin versus this type of coin for 10 minutes. And he's loading it onto his cart, and the merchant's like follows him out, and he sees him loading in it, sees him loading it into the car, and the girl is sitting there, and he says something like, "Oh, they truly are Spice and Wolf." And I was just like, "Ah, gun to the head, titular line, no." Like, I sure am tired of all these Star Wars, you know, kind of a thing. So, anyway, Spice and Wolf, totally baffling. I do not get it, and yet it is weirdly compelling. I've got to tell you, I probably wouldn't watch a second season of it. I don't even know if I'll finish out the last couple on the set, but it was a weird couple of hours there where I was, that was a wacky couple hours.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you find yourself, you know, having, you know, 4 hours later, you've gone through like X number of episodes and you're like, what just happened? Why did I do that?
I feel strangely violated. So what else is going on this week?
Well, it's starting to be award season. We had the Golden Globes nominees announced, and you know, people are starting to talk about Oscars.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this last week.
Yeah, and
well, the most recent revelation is Ponyo got snubbed by the Globes, which it's the Golden Globes. I mean,
yeah,
who cares,
Golden Globes is a bunch of it is literally run by a team of international suck-ups of, you know, film critic suck-ups, or that's the common knowledge anyway.
Yeah, well, not imagine an awards ceremony that's judged entirely by the, like, the hosts of the French version of Entertainment Tonight, and that's pretty much the Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
Jesus. It's like, thank you, Mary Hart. I didn't like your movie.
Yeah. Well, the big thing that always gets said is they nominate movies to get celebrities on their red carpet. It's That's really what it's about. Hence why Sandra Bullock is nominated for both The Proposal and The Blind Side.
The Blind Side is nominated for a Golden Globe.
For Best Drama. And it has a shot.
You know, the critics didn't all hate it. I was actually shocked.
No, it got nominated because the critics didn't hate it, and it was a hit. But anyway, right. Anyway, Ponyo got snubbed.
Yeah, Ponyo got snubbed, and, you know, I'm kind of delighting. Well, yes, I haven't watched it yet, but I'm kind of a little bit relieved that not more people are completely bent out of shape over that.
Well, every year people complain that anime didn't get nominated for anything. I mean, there's always one movie floating around out there that might get a nomination, but it never does. I mean, last year they were saying, why didn't Evangelion 1.0 get nominated? Because it fucking doesn't deserve a Golden Globe nomination. Right. Ponyo had a shot, though.
It really did.
Because it's a Miyazaki movie, and he's right. The only director that's actually, anime director that's really respected by the establishment.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so there's always the weird anime fan complaints where they're complaining that Naruto, the movie 4, didn't get the nomination or whatever. But this year it did get completely snubbed, and one thing that I found interesting about that was it is the closest to, like, a pure children's film. Like, it is of those movies that are nominated, it is the most, like, directly aimed at kids. So for once, the anime was probably the least mature title.
Wow.
on the list. I mean, I would recommend it to kids younger than I would Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. I mean, it plays at a really young audience. So for once, the complaints about it not being mature.
Well, fair enough. But, you know, that is interesting because, you know, if you go back throughout the last, you know, 6-7 years and look at what anime films did get completely ignored by the Academy, which is almost all of them.
All of them, yeah. Except for Spirited Away.
Right. Spirited Away was being the more or less the sole exception. You look at why these films don't get a wider audience. First of all, they never get wider than, you know, a very small art run release here, with very few exceptions. So no one sees them.
Yeah, Ponyo made it out to like 900 screens.
In order to get Oscar's attention, first of all, you have to have a pretty big, high-budget marketing campaign just for the sake of Oscars.
Yep.
And I'm sorry, Funimation is not going to be spending money, you know, on Deadline Hollywood Daily for your consideration banners.
Yeah.
That's just not what they do.
Right, yeah.
And it would probably be a waste of time because large, large contingents of the Academy are, A, actors.
Yep.
And most actors do not take animation seriously because they're simply, you know, there's no body language to observe that is by an actor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all voice work, which is sadly, I think, kind of, you know, looked down upon in the acting community.
Mm.
So you have that. Second of all, vast, vast areas of the Academy are in the over 50 crowd.
Yep.
The ones that you show an anime to and they go, I wonder what culturally I missed here.
The ones that are so scared of gay people, they let Crash win Best Picture. Anyway, right, old axe to grind.
That's another conversation. So yeah, we have that toxic contingent of mostly actors, mostly aged, and they'll never see it. It's just so completely outside the radar of anyone in the Academy. Now, Miyazaki happens to be a guy that is both, you know, talented enough and mainstream enough in his appeal that he was able to break through, at least for a little while.
Yeah.
Someone like Satoshi Kon, too eclectic. Yep. He'll never buy into it.
Too weird.
Yeah, too weird.
Too weird. No one that picks that. Sony's not going to spend money.
Right. And, you know, that if Satoshi Kon ever made a movie that you could argue was Oscar caliber, it was probably Millennium Actress.
Yeah.
And, you know, that got a, you know, flush it down the toilet release from Go Fish. And, you know, alongside of Ghost in the Shell 2, Innocence. And, you know, no one was, they kind of let that out there to flounder.
Yeah.
That was padding for to make sure that their actual animation got nominated.
Right, the animation they were trying to push at the time, which was their own, and that's the inherent conflict of interest. Disney probably only pushed Spirited Away so hard because Lasseter was there,
right.
Really wanted it to win.
Right.
Any other year, they probably know they have their own product out there. Disney has two movies that are both going to be nominated. Ponyo would have pushed one of them out. So I'm sure that it had a lot to do with it. Maybe the thinking is whoever was, you know, Lasseter and the crew that was pushing Miyazaki at Disney and glad-handing voters and getting the votes out for it back when Spirited Away came out, now they're like, well, he's got his. Now we can just go back to winning every year.
Right. You know, the public at large, it's kind of cute in a way how they still think of the Oscars as, you know, at least attempting to crown the best film of the year.
Yeah, it's all politics.
It is all politics, just like every other contest. And there's backstabbing, and there's weird, you know, behind-the-scenes maneuvering, and there's lots of money spent. And frankly, you know, anime is enough hard enough time buying lunch right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is so not a priority.
I will say briefly, if anyone wants a sort of a fun little candid look at what can happen during the Oscar voting process and what that's like, check out Down and Dirty Pictures, the story of Miramax under Harvey Weinstein. The whole story of
how... Is that a documentary or a book?
It's a book. It's a really fascinating book. But the whole story of how Shakespeare in Love won over Saving Private Ryan is in there. And it's all politics and money. So, yeah, interesting.
That's
interesting.
What Harvey Weinstein was known for doing best.
Yep, yep. So,
and now he isn't either.
Right. So the other, very briefly, I just wanted to mention this, that James Cameron is out there talking about Battle Angel again. He did this 4 or 5 years ago. He did it a couple of years before that. He brings it up every now and then. And I have to say, like, I'm excited for him to actually commit to making that movie. Have you ever read those comics or watched? I'm sure you've seen it.
Saw the OAV, and I wanted to like it, and it was really pretty, but I had a lot of problems with that OAV.
Yeah, well, it wasn't very good. It wasn't even a good representation of the comics. And Cameron has gone on record saying he's interested in the comics, not that shitty anime.
Okay, fair enough.
I think he could make it. I think now he has the technology, based on what I've seen of Avatar, and we're taping this a day or two before it comes out. I think he could do it with that technology, but only now. Only just now. Because unless you're going to make it a CG cartoon, and he didn't want to do that, and I don't really want to see that, I'd like to see him attempt it in a live-action space.
So what's changed that you think it can be represented now?
The famous image of Alita is basically a busted-up robot torso, and her limbs are all kind of fucked up, right? So there's big empty spaces in her limbs.
Right, but she still moves.
Right, she still moves, and she's supposed to be a human-looking girl. I don't think you could convincingly create that character without the level of CG that we're seeing out of Avatar. Because what they've done there is, I mean, it's photoreal. And I really don't think you could have accomplished that unless you were just making it a stylized CG cartoon.
We've had similar things, like, for example, Harvey Dent's face in Dark Knight.
Yeah, but even that, if you go, I mean, have you seen that on Blu-ray?
No.
Because those effects are not that great.
Really?
They're okay.
I saw it in the theater, and I was pretty impressed.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I was pissed that he could still talk and not talk like this.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah. Even that, the drawing in Alita is so complicated. I mean, it is pinpoint little gears on everything. I mean, it is such a heavily detailed look. You wouldn't be able to recreate that convincingly in a live action space without this level of CG.
Wow.
So I'm hoping that he actually does make it. I mean, I talked to Lightstorm, which is a production company, back when I worked at Anime Insider, when they were bringing up Alita again before they announced they were doing Avatar first.
I see.
And basically the person I talked to there said, Look, he likes to talk. James Cameron likes to talk about stuff. He will float pretty much anything in front of a group of reporters, and they'll all report on his, oh, this is going to be his next project. But he's just talking. So I wouldn't bet, I mean, I hope that's his next movie, but I wouldn't bet on it until he's in front of the camera, or behind the camera, or whatever. I wouldn't bet on it until it's in production.
Sadly, I think this is probably the one anime manga-based North American project that is most likely to take off at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, everything else has been just stone silence for the past 6 months, while Hollywood, you know, slowly dies.
Yeah, well,
it's been brutal out here.
That's true, and not only that, I do think the property has a specific appeal that will cross over into a mainstream audience very easily.
Absolutely, in a way that Cowboy Bebop doesn't.
Yeah, in a way that Cowboy Bebop doesn't. You have cool robot fights, and it's all sort of steampunk, not really steampunk, cyberpunk. It just crosses over, has a cool name, Battle Angel, that's cool.
Full of angst.
Yeah, there's lots of angst and stuff like that. So I think it could really do well. I hope it's his next movie. But again, I now that in my head I have the image of what he can do with the CG, now I think it can be done. And I definitely agree with, in the past he was saying, look, we can't do this until I basically invent the technology to make that movie. And I think he's finally done it. But we'll see.
Well, yay.
Okay, well, that's enough. That's enough jabber john from us. Let's go ahead and bring in our guest.
Excellent.
Tell me more about this Christmas.
Well, it's a wonderful time of the year. Everyone has lots of fun.
You mean they get in fights?
No, they have fun.
Fights are fun. I like fights.
And you give each other presents.
And when you open them, they explode, right?
No, they're nice gifts.
Nice. Doesn't sound like much fun to me.
Well, we're back. Our guest this week is none other than Chris Beveridge, the head honcho, founder, and current content editor of AnimeOnDVD.com, otherwise known as Mania, the anime section at Mania.com now. Chris, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So give us a little bit of a... Tell us how you got started, because you've been doing this about as long as we have, maybe a little longer. How'd you get your start? When did Anime on DVD get started?
Well, let's see. I started back in 1998. I had just finished a GM session at a company I was working for, and I was bored. So I decided to learn how to do HTML, and that was the same time that DVD was coming out. So foolishly, I said, oh, there's not that much anime on DVD, so I'll write about that and learn how to do HTML at the same time. And it kind of just snowballed from there over the next couple of years.
Cut to 5 years later, and there's like 300 new SKUs a month.
Yeah, exactly. it was a surprise.
And when you started the site, I mean, was it always a community focus? Or, I mean, what was your intention when you started?
Well, like I said, my intention when I really started at the beginning was just to talk about something that I was passionate about. And it snowballed from there. And we had a lot of people that were talking about it because nobody else was really talking about DVD at the time. Because it was considered a format that was going to fail as horribly or worse than Laserdisc.
Right. So, yeah, and Dimmick would reign supreme.
Yeah. So we had a lot of people that wanted to talk about it. And it was generally at that time skewed at an older crowd as well, because the price of DVDs and the players at the time were like $1,000. So it was a different kind of situation than a lot of normal anime forums.
And that, I mean, those forums really became a powerhouse over time. Your community has always been very, well, not always, but it eventually became very robust to the point where I would make the argument that at one point, especially during the bubble, the anime on DVD forums were almost monolithic in their representation of this is anime fandom. Anime fandom exists here in this space. This is where you can interact with them. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that's where most of my bandwidth went. That was where I was paying a lot of the money for. Because everybody was there talking about all different anime things, but the DVD portion was the biggest part.
Right. Now, this is something I got to ask, but I kind of want to just get it out of the way, just up front. Now, it's been said, and this is certainly the perception among many, is that you guys, the anime and DVD community forums, were influential in the licensing process in many ways. Did you ever experience that firsthand? Did you ever agree with that? I mean, what was your take on that?
I don't know if it was influential. You had people that generally were putting money where their mouth was. Mm-hmm. There's always the ones that just talk. But we generally had the audience that was putting the money down every month on a product and talking about what they wanted. So there was a little more attention paid. But like any company, and I've talked with every studio over the years numerous times, it's one sliver of a factor in what they decide to license. So it wasn't like, hey, this site likes that or these guys like that in this forum, let's go get it. It was always a thing of like, well, there is a vocal community for it. Let's see what we can find out. They were used as a reference point more than anything else.
Right, or sort of maybe even a justification for someone who wanted to license a title and needed sort of a backup. So, like, yeah, like, they already had the show in mind, and so here's all these people. Look, these guys are, you know, talking it up. Mm-hmm. So that might have been part of it. Are there any titles that you think that got licensed? Specifically, I mean, you've always been close with ADV in particular. Were there any titles that you think the anime and DVD community really, I think, more than others, had a direct hand in influencing that decision?
There may have been a couple over the years, but there's so many titles that come out, I've lost track of what happened when. I can barely keep up with this week of what I'm dealing with. And, right. You know, there's always a couple of niche titles out there that probably got a little extra push from it, but none that I've ever heard were directly attributed to the users, the readers, or anything.
Yeah, I'm not sure you could really convince, the studio boss. these 10 guys on Anime and DVD are really in love with Magical Girl, Lyrical Nanoha, or whatever.
I tried that at CPM various times. Did not work, and it wasn't
enough. Let's put it this way. If I had any real influence, Galactic Heroes would have been licensed long ago, so... That just says it right there. We couldn't get that done, so...
You'll have to settle for importing them for, like, $1,000.
So you're obviously still doing this, but in a different way. What can you tell us about the transfer over to Mania? How did that come about, and what's your job like now? Is it more or less stressful than it was when you were owning the company?
It's less stressful because I don't have to deal with advertising anymore, and that was always the hard part. It's a consistent job at this point now, whereas before it was very varied in how we were getting paid.
Right.
And I mean, this is my full-time job and has been since 2004, I think. The main difference is I don't have that anymore, so it's really the same job otherwise. I'm still reviewing everything that comes out. I'm still writing about everything and interacting with the studios and the readers and everything. So there's been no significant change in my day-to-day part of it.
You just don't have to worry quite as much about the money.
Right.
That's good.
Which is really good because, let's face it, this business ain't what it used to be.
Yeah. This came about in January of 2008. When I was approached by Mania about it. And they'd come to me every couple of years trying to do something, but I just wanted to prove that I could do it on my own. And I did it on my own for 10 years, which, considering how much we went through, was pretty significant, I thought, and how long a site really does last some days under one person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But at that time, they were calling me and increasing how much they were willing to buy us for, and that's when ADV started going under, and every other email I was getting was, okay, this company's next, and then this one's next, because everybody was getting ready to drop.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that, you know, that small fear, plus knowing I'm very into politics and economy, so I knew what was happening there as well. And we saw what happened at the end of 2008.
Right.
Yeah.
So
near apocalypse.
Yeah. I mean, it was the bubble that we saw on the anime side was a precursor for what was happening everywhere else.
So time to bend down the hatches.
Yeah. I wanted not so much as to get out, but I wanted to make sure things were secure.
Well, you know, when you go back and look, I mean, our two sites are more or less the only sites that are still around from that era. You know, and we had a couple near-death experiences early on.
Yep. Actually, that reminds me. There used to be, and it was completely false, but there used to be a rivalry between ANN and AOD.
A perceived rivalry.
It was totally perceived. Because, like, there were never any ill words between you or any of us. Ultimately, I kind of got to the bottom of it. I found out who was sort of propagating the whole idea that there was a rivalry. And it wasn't anyone that really worked directly for either site. It was just people, you know, creating drama. But that never existed. And that's, you know what, it's kind of a weird thing. And I know it only exists now in the video game journalism space. But generally, as a rule, we've all been very chummy over the years. Like, there's never really been a sense of direct competition.
No. I mean, in a way, we go after different things. So it's never been a competition. And we've seen each other at various conventions and social media sites and everything else. And we get along, I think, partially because we don't talk about anime when we do get together.
That's true.
By that time, we're so burned out.
There's more to life than that. So, you know, if we work on it all day, you don't want to talk about it afterwards.
Yeah, totally. So, obviously, you spend most of your time reviewing DVDs and now Blu-ray, but you are moving into the streaming space a little bit. Is there any concern that as the retail presence of anime shrinks, that you're going to have difficulty producing content or keeping the site as fresh as it used to be? I mean, the DVD, you know, bubble is basically over at this point. You know, as someone who focuses on retail product, how has the decline sort of impacted your workday, your schedule?
The weird thing is that even though it's declining, there's still more coming out because we're doing all box sets now.
Yeah.
So it's more work per review, more time invested in it. And conversely, we have more people looking at the reviews because it's a lot more money up front. I don't think we're going to see the death of packaged media anytime soon.
True.
But it's definitely becoming sort of like, I don't want to say where Laserdisc was because it's not going to be right, but it's where people are putting the money up for that and the Blu-rays and everything. They're going to be more interested in what does come out. So there's still going to be a lot of product, but we're trying to balance that a little more with some of the manga and doing more streaming things since that is where everything is naturally going.
So like, I got to ask this. Is it, like, I have a hard time, a much harder time sitting through streaming shows than DVD, than what, just sitting down and popping in a DVD and sitting on the couch and watching it on a TV. Maybe it's just because that's how I grew up, and watching stuff on a computer still kind of gets to me. Is the streaming experience, do you have difficulty with that when you're reviewing something?
The only problem I have, excuse me, with the streaming experience is that I don't like watching one episode at a time. It just feels wrong after doing four episodes for discs and then now 13 or 26. I'm still watching everything on a TV, though. I can't watch stuff on a laptop or a desktop. So it hasn't been different in that sense, but just having the one episode a week bothers me to no end.
So are you reviewing them per episode, or are you doing them in chunks? Because we're doing them in, our sort of official policy now is we're doing like six at a time, sort of artificially forcing it into like a single DVD review format. How are you handling that?
It depends on the show. Like Full Metal Alchemist, we're doing that every week. Mm-hmm. The new series, we're trying to cover them as they come out. Like Inuyasha and One Piece. When we do the older shows, I did Slam Dunk this summer. Uh-huh. And it was fun watching that for five episodes and doing that in a chunk. Right. But with the new stuff every week, we're trying to hit it up as it airs because that's how Mania handles the Hollywood TV side for like new series.
Boy, that's going to be hard coming up with something new to say every week.
Some shows are harder than others, but I found that with like 13-episode box sets too. Some shows just don't merit much to be said.
Those are always the hardest reviews to write. The C+, the B-.
I remember what originally killed even my interest in doing it. And for me was having to review 8 volumes of Clamp School Detectives.
I did that over 2 days.
Oh, Jesus.
Now that brings me to the next thing. You are obviously a crazy, like, marathon watcher, and you must have a gigantic collection. How big is your DVD collection?
Well, we just broke 6,000 this week.
6,000.
So do you keep everything?
I do keep everything, because for a lot of these, depending on the series, I will go back and reference the original release for packaging issues or differences with extras. Oh, so I want to have everything on hand in case I need it.
A lot of that stuff is actually really hard to find now.
Yeah.
Yes, but I thin-packed it all, so it's worth nothing.
Excellent. I did the same thing, and now I gave up on the cases altogether.
So how many hours a week would you say you spend watching anime?
I typically do between 70 to 80 episodes a week.
Oh my God!
I spent 1 week, Monday through Friday, 12 episodes a day watching all three seasons of Slayers.
And you didn't put a gun in your mouth. Congratulations.
But I realized that I'm never going to like that show.
Oh my God. That just sounds... I mean... How do you endure it? I mean...
I enjoy it. I do enjoy the shows. I mean, there's some stuff that's just no good, but by and large, I enjoy what I watch. I like my job, so it's not a stressful thing.
So the saturation just never got to you?
You never burned out?
If it hasn't gotten to me at this point...
So have you ever burned out?
No. I've gotten a low here and there, but I think that's more of just from... I had like a couple weeks where there was nothing but hentai.
Yeah, well, we all know how big a fan you are.
Yeah, well, you know,
that's the we'll get to that in a minute. But that is a shock to me, sir, that you managed to watch 70 to 80 episodes a week and you've never really burned out. My hat is off to
if
you.
If I marathon all three seasons of Slayers, I wouldn't watch anime again for weeks, months, maybe years.
Is there?
There's always a good show around the corner. That's what keeps me going.
If you say so. So, then that makes me curious, like, is there something that sticks out in your mind as, like, the worst viewing experience you've ever had? Has anything really brought you to the brink?
There's so many things I don't really remember over the years. It just blurs, so nothing really stands out, which is kind of unfortunate. The one I always go back to, just because it's the most obvious one, was Spirited Away.
What?
And that movie continues to put me to sleep, no matter how many times I try to watch it.
Really?
The one anime that won an Oscar.
Yeah, that one. It's just got to be something in me that says, it's popular, I can't watch that, but it's not that. It was just the one Miyazaki movie that I just couldn't get into.
So, have you ever finished it?
I have finished it. I've had to stop and start it and back up to get through it, but...
That is wild. You're an interesting fellow.
Yeah. I'm just scrolling through his list of reviews at this point, and it looks like almost all of his really, really low reviews are hentai.
Well, that stuff is easy to bust on, right?
Right. Oh, and there's Aoi and Mutsuki, A Pair of Queens.
That was pretty dire.
Oh, God.
Well, that brings me to a question. What is your... Do you have a personal reviewing philosophy? Because whenever I read your reviews, I say this out of respect, you're very middle of the ground on pretty much most things. I don't think that's unfair to say. You're very even-handed. You don't tend to get too fired up or too down on anything. So what is your review philosophy? What do you think is valuable in a review?
The way I end up doing my stuff, because we cover different areas of each release. I mean, we have obviously the technical side, and there are a lot of people that used to come to us just for that, so we focused on that as well.
Yeah.
When looking at the actual content itself, when I do the first half of the review or so, I really try to just play it even to say, here's what the show is. Here's what it's about. So, you know, you make your own opinions based on what they're trying to present. And then I go into what I liked about it, what I didn't like about it, and kind of wrap it all together. And I've always had the philosophy of saying, this may not be for me, but here's why someone might like it, or here's why someone might not like it. Hmm. And providing why I liked it or didn't like it as well. But it's trying to, I've reviewed probably, 3,000 releases at this point. So I have a pretty decent body of work to go by.
Yeah.
And the consistency is the big thing, I think, for a lot of people, because they know where I stand on so many different shows. Even though I'm middle of the ground, there are shows I get really into and the ones that don't work so well. But having that middle of the ground thing where it's not like completely snarky or down, because there's so many things where you read, it's just like so negative about everything. You're like, why are you watching it?
Yeah.
I don't try to, like the other reviewers that I have, if somebody doesn't like Star Trek, I'm not going to give them a Star Trek show to watch. It's counterproductive. But I don't want to give somebody who loves a show the show they love either. So it's trying to find that middle ground of saying, here's what it is, and going over the positives and negatives about it, and letting the people that want to buy it or not buy it, make the decision from that.
Yeah, see, I always had a conflict with that, because to me, on the one hand, yes, it's very even-handed, but on the other hand, you get to a point where you wind up sort of sounding like you're making excuses for everything and finding, you know, if you like dumbass shows about ninjas, you'll love this dumbass show about ninjas. You know, like, there's nothing that's bad at that point because everything has an audience. You know, there is a fan for every show. Mm-hmm. So does that ever enter into your head, like, well, okay, no, this is legitimately bad. Like, there is no audience for this.
Yeah, I mean, that hits at times. Because it's, for me, I like a lot of different genres, a lot of different shows. I grew up reading, I would come home from the comic book store with, you know, 60 or 70 issues of different things. Because I liked going into different areas. And the same way with the Hollywood stuff. So it's a wide range of tastes, and it's kind of awkward in that sense. But I like being able to look at different things and take different things from it. The interesting thing that I've had, especially this year, because so many releases are re-releases, it's going back and looking at shows. I mean, Slayers was really an exception in a way, because I didn't change my opinion of it. I went back and watched Dragon Ball or Dragon Ball Z. I never liked the show at one point, but going over it now in a different form and different experiences, since it's been 12 years since I've seen a lot of these things, I've gone back and looked at those old reviews and see how my opinions have changed. And some shows I like more, some I like less.
Right. So, do you ever watch anime for fun?
Yeah, I have one show I'm watching for fun.
What's that?
That I'm not reviewing.
And what is that?
One Piece.
Oh, hey. Oh. I watched that for fun, too.
How about that?
I watched the first volume when I was going to review it, and I said, oh, my God, this show is horrible. And I turned it off and gave it to someone else to review. And then I was afraid they were going to quit on me at some point, so I better keep up on it myself so I can step up if I have to. And since I didn't have to think critically about it, I got to actually enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a very, very entertaining show. That one's a lot of fun.
I have a question. Over the years, you know, anime DVDs have changed a lot from, you know, when they were first coming out, and, you know, the old CPM ones that had that big anime DVD stripe along the side. They've changed a lot, and for the better, I think. And I think your forums, honestly, had probably a lot to do with that. Is there anything that you and your the guys in your forum were really pushing that you're particularly proud of that are now common parlance? And is there anything that you're now pushing for, like Blu-ray, for example?
The one interesting comment I read recently was that my site and forums were responsible for the awful condition the industry is in today.
I don't think that's true.
No. Who said
that? Because we wanted quality releases that apparently could never be achieved, which just made me laugh. It was like, what we wanted out of the DVDs was, initially, because we were not necessarily afraid, but when the companies were starting to do DVD, that they were going to do dub-only shows. because at the time we were told dubs outsell 10-1 on VHS.
Right.
So we were making the big push of like, look, one SKU, one product, put both on there, everybody's happy. So that was one of the reasons we started the site and really got our thing going, was because we were worried about that. I don't know that we really pushed anything in particular over the years outside of really wanting the shows to look good, to have what was in the Japanese release. We, you know, we were talking about how we wanted as many extras as could be had because of licensing agreements and things like that. But it always came down to the show being the priority, making sure that it was encoded well, had the right audio on it.
Didn't have any overlays.
No overlays, you know, as unedited as possible so people could get the experience that they wanted. Not everybody wanted the same experience, but DVD offered the ability to provide that. So it was making the companies aware of what people did want, as well as educating consumers about it as well.
Right. One thing, actually, I always... And the Anime on DVD forums did have a reputation for having the hardest to please fans out there. I remember back in the day, I read somebody, honest to God, complaining that the cover art for a Bandai Please Teacher DVD was something like a millimeter off center, and they actually had busted out the ruler, figured like, hey, this isn't quite, like, the printing on this isn't quite right, and so thusly they refused to buy it.
Yeah.
And a big criticism lobbied at a lot of the AOD community forums is that they'll just come up with any reason not to buy something. Even the smallest nitpick is enough. And I've noticed one thing I have admired about you is that you've never been afraid to express irritation with some of your more hardline forum goers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've always been willing to say you guys are being a little ridiculous. Has that ever been difficult for you, or is it always just like you're just not going to put up?
No, it's not been difficult. I spend a lot of time on other forums over the years, a lot of DVD, a lot of Blu-ray forums, and that kind of attitude is really just, it's everywhere on the internet, depending on where you go when people talk about buying stuff.
Yeah.
Anybody will justify not buying something in any way they can if they don't really want to. And a lot of people just mouth off for the hell of it, too.
That's true.
Yeah.
One thing that I've noticed lately with the Blu-ray contingent that is starting to really annoy me is the big push for lossless audio encoding. Now, I dabble in Blu-ray. I do a little bit of authoring on the side. Lossless audio, almost everybody doesn't even have the equipment to really even take full advantage of it anyway. So it just seems like kind of a waste of time and effort to me. What do you think of that push?
Okay. I'm part of that contingent, and it's the same conversation I had back around 1999, 2000 of, why do you want an anamorphic transfer? We all have 4x3 TVs, where most people will never have a widescreen TV.
So you think lossless audio...
I mean, when I was pushing HDTV stuff back when I first got my 40-inch Toshiba back in 2000, I was doing my reviews on that, and people said, you're doing it on an unrealistic set. Nobody will have sets like that. And now you can go and get, you know, HD set for, you know, how cheap, especially this holiday. It's just that common out there now. The thing we always pushed with the DVD side, and we're doing with the Blu-ray side as well, is we want to future-proof the product you're buying now as much as possible, because you don't want to rebuy it down the years. Or, you know, if in 2 years you do have a good lossless audio playback system and the disc doesn't have it, you're going to go, well, why didn't they do it right the first time? Why am I going to buy it again?
No, that makes sense. But I guess maybe it's a little short-sighted to say I'm probably never going to have a home theater that takes full advantage of lossless audio, but... Well, hey, you never know. It doesn't hurt to have it on there, I guess.
Yeah, people said that about 5.1 audio in general, too, way back. They're like, well, why are you bothering with it? It takes up more space. Just give us a stereo show.
Well, that's the thing, though. I mean, everyone can tell the difference between stereo and 5.1 if they have a 5.1 system. Everyone. But lossless audio, I mean, everyone wants a theatrical experience at home. Theatrical is like the Dolby Digital they use in theaters is the lowest possible quality 5.1 that you put on a DVD. It is almost identical.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I just... it's hard for me to wrap my head around that people can really tell the difference, or if it's just like so much other audiophile bunk out there, and it's just, it's, you know, placebo effect.
There is some of that. I was never huge into audio when it came to the DVD side, but there were a couple of shows that I got to see through working with Nightjar, I think it was, where they gave me a disc that had like a 5.1 mix, a stereo, and a PCM stereo. And the difference just on DVD was phenomenal.
Between stereo and PCM, really?
Yeah, because there were even Adult Source Media did some PCM shows before with like 1.5 meg. And it was a very different experience, just not even just in the sound level, but in how it presented itself. And like if I look at what Bandai did with Akira, if they had only done that in, you know, a basic stereo, it just would not have been the same.
Well, Akira has a particularly wacky track.
for those that don't know, I know full post-production studios that don't have audio capable of reproducing the Akira audio track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that brings me to, you mentioned Adult Source Media. You're like the only, you're pretty, I think you're one of the only professional sites that covers hentai regularly. Just out of curiosity, and I've expressed my opinion on reviewing hentai that I think it's a waste of time. Why do you do it?
I was raised very liberally, and I really don't like ghettoizing something is, I guess, the way you could look at it. It's a legitimate form of media. It may not be for everybody, and I don't push on anybody and say, hey, you got to watch this. But I want to give it the same kind of basic respect of saying we can look at this critically and professionally and talk about it, because there are, to me, shows that do have good stories to that do deal in things beyond just the sex.
But very few.
Very few, but at the same time, there's comedies, there's a lot of things that have fun with it as well. There's a lot of crap, but there's a lot of stuff that I've enjoyed as well over the years.
So you think the attitude that, look, the only value this thing has is, are you going to get off to it or not, is that's not fair? Like, that's just too dismissive of anime porn?
Well, when the live-action stuff doesn't happen anymore that often, but back in the 80s, it was, producers would really try hard to do, there were parody stories or stories of some sort, and it was all to serve the scene. But anime works the same way. A lot of them do try to tell stuff because they're based off of visual novel games and other things. So they tend to put a little more into it. And there are enough that cross over in Japan now to mainstream shows. Mm-hmm. So you never know what's really going to turn around and say, hey, this is going to be a real regular anime at some point.
Right, like Queen's Blade, that would have been released as, with an additional shot or two as hentai 10 years ago.
Yeah. But it's really just giving it the same kind of respect, because I'm very liberal with this stuff and talk about sex and porn and everything else. So it's
in your wheelhouse as it is. So
yeah, I mean, everybody knows what it is, and I'm not trying to make it better than saying it's like this greatest thing or anything else. But I always felt that the companies that put it out deserve to have everything looked at the same way as everything else.
Does some of the, I unfortunately, I've worked on a lot of hentai over the years, and I have to say, the misogyny after a while really, really got to me. I mean, that stuff ate away at my soul. How do you stay sane when, you're like watching 14-year-old girls getting ripped apart by tentacles?
See, that's not so bad. It's the really sick stuff that does it.
Like,
anything with the scat stuff. No. I don't mind seeing somebody get ripped apart, because you see that in a different way in like mainstream horror movies. It's not quite as sexual, but you see the same kind of gore and everything.
That's true.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
But at least they're not getting shit on, is what you're saying.
Exactly. They're not getting it on, or they're eating it either, so,
jeez.
Now, see, I'm 12, so I still think poop is hilarious.
God.
That's why 1 year I was trying to get you a night shift nurse's statue for your desk.
Aww.
I couldn't get it in time before, like, an Otakon for you, though.
I would have incredibly appreciated it. It was, we had the most fun at CPM with that title. I kid you not, when it's that and, like, Legend of the Dragon Kings, what are you going to have fun with?
Yeah.
Well, I have to say,
of course, I get to watch all those again now because they're re-releasing them.
Like, I got to say, though, I have my stance on reviewing porn and whether or not I think it's valuable. And, ANN will never cover hentai. We did once or twice in the past, but I put the kibosh on that. But after hearing your stance on it, I have to say, I respect that. I think it makes a lot of sense. And in a way, I'm glad that there's somebody out there that is handling that material, so to speak. It's not us, but I get it. So thank you for that. Thank you for that explanation.
Yeah, really, the overall view on it, really the last thing to say on it is I don't like the idea of like the little porn shop that looks like it's, a dark garbage place off in the corner in a ghetto or something. Whereas you've got more of these stores now that are on main streets, not as much as they were at one point, but your downtown Boston has several prominent sex stores.
There's a strip mall right a couple of blocks from my house that has a Subway, a skate shop, and a store called Erogenous Zone.
Right. So it's all about not putting it in that slum kind of setting. It's like giving it the open honesty about it. So
Vivid has a very nice building here in Hollywood.
Yes, they do.
It's right across from Universal Studios, in fact. Okay, well, we should probably go ahead and get to the Twitter questions. We don't have too many for you, but we've got a couple here. They all many of them focus around a particular article that we will discuss with you. First up, from Ed Sizemore, a great manga blogger. Question for Chris. With so many anime websites out there, is it harder to maintain a unique voice and perspective?
It's not really, because all I'm doing is talking what I think about, how I feel, and my views on things. So it's not hard to be myself. And with everything I write, whether some people believe it or not, I am saying what I feel about each particular release, article, or news item.
Right. So do you ever concern yourself with what other people – do you go out there and read, you know, a lot of the blogs and all the other sites?
No, I really don't read a lot of other sites because I don't want to have an influence on the things that I review with like any new shows that come out. I don't see anything about it for the most part until I pop the disc in the player or I watch the stream. So I'm not – I don't prejudge any shows outside of the really huge ones. I mean, I knew about Naruto before it hit, but anything else, for the most part, I don't know about. So I'm seeing it for the first time without anybody else influencing me on it.
Right. Okay. Now, but I know you don't do that for movies, for regular American films.
Yeah.
Is that just a professional thing? That's just a decision you've made to maintain the integrity of your sort of review philosophy?
It comes from that. Also a thing of the late 90s when I was online as heavily as I am now, there were so many sites that dealt with upcoming theatrical movies, and you would read about them and every little detail about the production as it was underway. And then when I sat in the theater and I watched a couple of them, I realized I knew every scene that was coming and almost every line of dialogue. Mm. So I was like, I got to pull back. I can't be this into this stuff because it ruins the experience.
Yeah.
And that carried over to the anime side as well when I started doing more of the reviews.
Yeah, I found myself, because I used to be that way too, reading all the production diaries and every possible thing you can about a movie. It does ruin it. I think you're totally right. I mean, I get a lot more out of movies now that I'll see the one trailer and that's it. And it the movie's so much more fun because you haven't seen the entire thing before you walk into the theater. The worst is when it's a comedy and they put all the funny jokes in the trailer.
Yep.
That's the worst. Okay, from Japaneter, how did the acquisition by Mania change anime on DVD's role in the community?
It just put a different door on it, I guess you could say, because people have, they're not as, I don't really know how to answer that one in the sense that the community itself has stayed relatively the same, and the things we're doing are the same. But since it has a different trapping, some people didn't care for the new trappings.
You don't have to answer this, but how's your traffic held up since you moved over?
It's really hard to parse it down because it's part of the larger site.
Right.
So.
Okay, and from Shintaku, I guess this is for everybody. Is it worth putting older series on Blu-ray? Justin, why don't you start on that?
Sometimes. it really depends. Like Slayers, you put that on Blu-ray, and I think it would still look just as horrible as it does now on DVD. Or something like, you know, something that was actually animated on 35mm with 35mm production values, and that would probably be worth putting on Blu-ray, but it would need a new transfer, and not a whole lot of shows are going to sell that much to make that worthwhile.
Chris, what's your take?
Yeah, pretty much the same thing. I mean, the older stuff will make out better just if it's from film sources and everything. And some shows will make out better that were done early on in DVD's life cycle because the authoring tools were so horrible. You know, there was one time where Funimation couldn't encode over 5 megabits per second for a lot of their shows.
Oh, God.
So.
Yeah, ended a year ago.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are some releases that would make out better just in having the higher bandwidth and bit rates and everything. So there's not everything, but a lot of these shows will get there eventually. I think there is enough merit for at least the popular titles to do it.
I really think most TV shows probably, there's no point, but OAVs, definitely the higher budgeted OAVs from the OAV boom era, and most features I think would benefit.
Yeah, there may not be much point, but there's also the marketing value and being able to give the title another life.
Yeah, for me, I gotta say, I'd be open to pretty much everything so long as they remastered it properly, because since getting into Blu-ray, and you guys are obviously the same way, on a DVD, I notice every little artifact, every little extra banding, or, you know, it after switching over to Blu-ray, watching a DVD is kind of ugh. So even for those older shows, even if, you know, the animation isn't great or whatever, I'd still rather see it on Blu-ray because it won't look all fucked up like a normal DVD, even upscaled. I still see all these artifacts, and it just looks better on Blu-ray. Rather have it that way.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, the consumer end upscaling generally doesn't look very good.
Yeah.
You buy an upscaling DVD player, and it really just looks like you stretch the video window out on your computer.
Oh, yeah.
It just looks like poo.
What do you use primarily PlayStation 3, right, Chris?
Yeah.
That's working out for you pretty well?
Yeah, I've liked that since the first one that I got. I've got four of them sitting in the house now.
Jeez. Nice. I wish I could do that. I built a home theater PC, and it's only recently made me not want to put a gun in my mouth.
Okay. From Grass, G-R-A-S, this goes back to our earlier discussion. Asked what he'd do after anime on DVD, Chris once said, "The world needs more scat-free porn, and I'm the man to deliver it." Is that still the plan?
Can I just go on the record here and say that I'm really not interested in seeing Chris Beveridge in a porno?
Oh, come on now.
I just want to direct.
Okay.
So is that your plan eventually to move into pornography production?
I have no idea what will happen, especially with some of the contacts I've made in the adult industry over the years.
Hey, maybe eventually you'll be living out here with us. It's San Fernando Valley, it's just a few miles away.
No, not based on reading your guys' Facebook stuff.
Hey, you know, it's 68 degrees right now.
And from, well, okay, this sort of goes back to what we were talking about. From Byreal, how willing do anime fans seem to be making the jump to Blu-ray? And actually, that's a good question for Chris. How has your community embraced Blu-ray?
The ones that do it, they've enjoyed it. They're in the same critical side as the people that came from Laserdisc in that time period, since they're looking for the better presentation. You know, the audio side is part of it. The only things that are really upset are that and whether the companies are upfront about whether they're getting an upscale or a true high def show. Beyond that, they generally seem to be pretty happy with what we're getting. So there's that side of it. You know, they just want to know, are we getting a high def release with this? And if we're not getting it right away, are we going to get it down the road so they don't buy the DVD sales?
Yeah. Okay, so finally, the final topic, and I got more questions about this than anything else. You wrote an article called The 9 Reasons Why Anime is Superior to Western Animation. I'll just paraphrase the questions, but mostly it's, do you really believe that? Was it just badly worded? One person said the article was insulting and poorly researched. Basically, a lot of flabbergasted responses to that article, and I didn't see it until well after it came out, but I guess to preface all this, what was up with that?
That was a, you know, can you be controversial and do this in the anime side? Because they do those kinds of articles on Mania to some extent, not so much, you know, comparing to the different things, but it was a way of saying why anime is better. And it wasn't something that I was intending to write. I mean, I've done different things since, but it was done in a tone that a lot of people haven't seen me do in a few years because I've been spending more time reviewing things than anything else. Mm-hmm. I had similar style articles earlier in the life cycle of the site. So it wasn't a new thing. It just hadn't been seen in a bit.
So, I mean, do you believe that? That anime is superior to Western animation, as a general rule?
As a general rule, it depends on what you're really talking about with Western animation, though, because there's different aspects of it. If you're just watching what's on TV, I don't watch Western animation on TV. I see a lot of it. My kids watch a lot of it, but none of it is appealing in the slightest. I mean, even the one that everybody talks about with Avatar: The Last Airbender didn't really appeal to me all that much. So, to me, I do find anime superior because it's telling complete stories, generally has characters that seem like characters, they're not all just cardboard cutouts of jokes and stereotypes and characters constantly.
No, they frequently are just marketing archetypes.
Well, they are that, but there's usually some story to it. It's not just, SpongeBob or things like that where it's just one thing day after day, because there's not that much aimed beyond kids.
You know, I hate to say it, I gotta side with Chris on this one.
Okay, so I guess we're putting this in the television box.
Yes, absolutely. Movies, you know.
Movies is a whole different thing. Because, it depends. And there are a lot of people that will talk about animation for movies, and you gotta qualify, are you talking the Pixar CG animation movies as well?
Okay, so in other words, maybe that a better title for that article would have been 9 Reasons Why Anime is Superior to Western Television Animation.
Yeah.
Because I think people just, I think people bristle even at the suggestion that might be true. I certainly did.
Right.
I mean, I think you're right in that it's generally better than Western television animation. However, my absolute favorite television show ever is The Venture Brothers, which is, now that I think about it, probably the only really, really good Western animated program.
Well, yeah, when you think about it, there are probably, when you think about how many intellectually challenging TV anime there have been,
yeah,
and compare that to how many intellectually challenging American TV animations there have been.
Yeah.
I mean, in our lifetimes, we can probably count it on our fingers.
Well, come to think of it, I mean, I like a lot of animated comedy. I mean, I'm a cop to watching Family Guy. You know, I watch The Venture Brothers as a comedy. I really liked Clone High, which was on MTV a long time ago. You know, there have been plenty of examples of good, mature comedy that's animated on television, but it's always comedy. In fact, the only thing that immediately comes to mind is like something like Aeon Flux, as like an action, serious, you know, a serious drama that's could be in that, and that was totally all based on anime anyway.
And I thought that was terrible.
Yeah, I didn't think it was good either. But that's the only thing that comes to mind that's was even remotely popular in terms of So I guess putting it in that box is a good clarification. But you absolutely wouldn't make that argument theatrically.
Not theatrically, because that becomes more of an actual discussion because it depends on what you pull out. The Fantastic Mr. Fox, are you including that in Western animation on theatrical? Do you include the Pixar stuff?
Yeah, you kind of have to. Yeah. But they are they are almost the exception because there's plenty of CG shit that comes out every year. I mean, Jesus yep. Christ, if I got to sit through another trailer for a fucking Ice Age movie, I'm going to put a gun in my head.
And then the other hand, we have like the French co-pros like, you know, Waltz with Bashir.
Yeah.
And, you know, Triplets of Belleville.
So that brings me to another question. Are you just in general a fan of all kinds of animation? How much world animation do you really consume?
There's not that much that comes through. I rent some stuff here and there. Mm-hmm. But it's not stuff I just really see all that often. Because, again, if I'm watching animation all the time now, I don't go actively seeking it out in my time off, so to speak.
All right, we'll wrap up with this. From Brian Van Dyke, what type of anime fan is worse? The dub everything there is, I don't care if it bankrupts you, or the English voices in my anime, my ears have been tainted type of fan. I would go ahead and say they're pretty much equally terrible.
They're pretty much equal.
I'd love to put them in a room with a one-sided mirror and just watch the blood flow. Yeah.
Do you have a lot of the Gurr no dubs people on your forum?
There's enough of them. And the main thing we've been doing is making sure they don't kind of get out of control since, you know, dubbing isn't done anywhere near as often as it used to be. Yeah. But since we always pushed for having both on there, it's not as strong because we had a lot of dub fans on there and that kind of helped balance it out. Whereas you go to a lot of forums and there are no dub fans at all.
Yeah, I guess that's true. We have a contingent. It's like four or five people that just basically copy paste their argument.
I don't think there's even that many. I think there's like three, and then the rest of them are, you know, occasionally they get fed by people's like, yeah, I like dubs too.
Yeah, that's very true. Okay, man. Well, that's about it. Thank you so much for taking the time to come and chat with us. It's been very pleasant, and we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Okay. Happy holidays, man.
You too. Take it easy, guys.
Take care.